Coming up on AI, having a clue. This is mind-blowing and very, very concerning.
He has outdone himself.
What's he done? They're going to build a wall around AI. It's going to be magnificent. Why do we need it?
For me,
it's fine. The system works.
No, it's inertia.
It's AI for AI's sake. And that is half the issue with AI. It's like, oh, let's bring AI in. At no other stage in their life does a 45-year-old man use a fucking unicorn emoji. It's nuts.
On the professional network.
Burn the books.
Literally. Hello and welcome to AI Having a Clue, brought to you by KPMG. Why are you waving, James? This is a podcast.
That's sort of visual. It's all visual nowadays, isn't it?
It is very good, very good. I am AI expert. No, I'm not. I am AI novice, George Butler. You're waving through me.
Presenter novice, George Butler. I, George Butler, novice, average human being, are the AI expert and professor of prompts, James Chandler, at your disposal.
Professor of prompts.
You like that?
Yeah, I mean, professor of prompts in name alone, because you don't have a... You're not a professor of anything.
Oh, I can prompt, boy. Don't worry about that.
Okay, well, as you can tell from that introduction, I'm a tired boy
could
today.
Could be an absolute shambles
today.
It
could be. I had a wedding. It was a lovely weekend, but you know, just the brain's not.
Yeah, well,
I'm relying on AI this week. All my work's just being done by Claude. That's a joke.
Cognitive offloading for a few days. Nice.
Coming up in today's episode, We've got all the latest news from the world of AI. Brand new listener question, of course. And James's big thing. It's been popping off in the news, hasn't it? Lots to cover.
It is frenetic, I think is the word they use, my friend. Yes, there's so much going on. It could be an AI news daily podcast. Not suggesting we go there. But
I don't think I can handle you every day.
you'd have to knock the weddings on the head. I need a bit more professionalism. Be a tighter ship if it was a daily one, mate. You might get away with it.
I've had a Coke Zero. The caffeine will kick in.
Other sody pops are available, by the way.
James, I'm big news, by the way.
Okay.
I booked a guest for the show.
Will you have that every week?
Monday, yes. Okay. We have a guest. And usually, you know, there's some kind of AI professor.
Hang on. You don't do the guest booking. This is Molly's abode. Why are you getting involved in this?
Obviously, yes.
Yeah. Well, I know about it.
Producer Molly obviously does an amazing job of booking some guests, right? Okay. But I've taken matters into my own hands.
Have you?
I booked a good friend of mine.
Well, this is all a bit shrouded in mystery. Come on.
Okay, look, here's the thing. We talk so often with professors and with thought leaders. Yeah. And I've got someone who's very, very clever, but finally is using tech for something really positive and making a good impact on the society and our planet. We've got history, Molly, with this man, don't we?
You've got history.
You know
yeah.
this character.
I know this character. Yeah.
I don't like what you give me a name. You're
well,
me
I
a...
just I just thought it was about time that someone uses AI as a force for good.
Right.
So I booked Len Tester. He's a good friend of mine.
Len Tester,
and he's coming onto the show to talk about how they're using AI in theme parks.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah.
He's coming on. He's an expert, especially in Walt Disney World, this man.
Is he?
Now, look. Okay. Let me explain here. He's also a computer scientist.
Right.
And he owns a massive, massive business.
Okay.
Essentially, they've been doing some incredible things with AI in themed parks and themed entertainment. And I thought, let's find out more about it.
I like it. If I recall, when you went to Florida somewhere in the States, weren't that impressed with all the AI stuff in the theme parks?
It was a bit hit and miss. Okay. It was a bit hit and miss. But there was some interesting stuff around face recognition, and there's some interesting stuff around robotics.
Okay.
And Len's going to tell us. No more spoilers.
Okay,
I
like it.
In like
robotics,
a week or so.
I like it.
I've been busy booking guests.
How's your LinkedIn game been last week or so?
Oh, not bad. Why?
Brand new feature.
Yeah.
Drop down. Seems like AI slop you can select now, if it seems like AI slop.
But that would be like every post on LinkedIn.
Well, this is the people are very divided on this, of course, because yes, it feels like a good flagging system, but I think your feelings, reputation is going to be damaged somewhat if you have written it and someone flags you as AI slop. Or it could be a means of people being a bit mean-spirited and trying to sort of mark down things just because they don't like people or something like that.
So and then LinkedIn are going to, how are they going to judge this?
Well, I don't know. I guess stuff's going to be filtered out, might be taken down, you might get a ping, they might run it through their own filter. Don't know.
But, Maybe it weakens its algorithmic chances of virability.
Well, I guess they want to prioritise proper human voices, don't they? And the more slot that might be clogging up means people aren't having that great an experience. So,
but what percentage of LinkedIn stuff do you think is AI? Because it does feel very high when you're going on there and there's just all those crappy emojis. No adult, here's the thing, James, no adult writes with emojis littered through what they're saying, like they're like a millennial 16-year-old. Yet on LinkedIn, everybody has these emojis, which they have to put on every single post. It's absolute bullshit. They've clearly not written it. It's clearly AI, because at no other stage in their life does a 45-year-old man use a fucking unicorn emoji. It's nuts.
On the professional network.
Exactly.
All places. Yes, it does feel weird. Well, I think it goes back to this point, and I'll bring you back to a fan favourite, Janine Wright, who gets into the complexities of, well, what is AI created? Is it that someone's had some help to edit a LinkedIn post? Have they let AI write it completely? Like, because there's a spectrum here. It's not just stuff that's being regurgitated out of Claude or something like that. So it's going to be interesting to see how it runs. But yeah, LinkedIn is divided on this one.
And this is my official plea.
Okay.
If you are using emojis in your LinkedIn posts,
doesn't want it.
Cut it out.
Oh, I'm going to be going through your LinkedIn posts like with a fine tooth comb
now.
Yeah,
you do that.
Previous ones as well. Oh, I did have to report a couple of your things, by the way.
Oh, stop it. That's just petulant, because you know it's not, that's, you can tell by the spelling errors it's not been written by you. Yeah. This is in the news, James, and I thought we'd dive right into this, given that it's very relevant to what we've just been talking about. Snapchat. Also, like LinkedIn, are trying to crack down on AI slop. So they're trying to get rid of low quality, fully AI generated content, which is obviously kind of flooding the internet. So they want to get rid of it, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, every single platform is trying to wrestle with this in one way, shape or form. Particularly if you're a Snapchat user on the Spotlight feed, they want to prioritize content that is made by real people, because guess what? It's more engaging, it's a bit more serendipitous, it doesn't look like everything else. So anything that is AI edited or AI that has been used to enhance content will be allowed, but they want to go after the stuff, this sort of mass-produced fake stuff. So I think interesting and positive that they're making that differentiation between, you know, stuff that has just been enhanced or helped and stuff that is just sort of off the conveyor belt of AI.
Very good. Well done, Snap, for cracking down. Let's talk about the follow-up to last week's episode, where we covered that OpenAI scandal, you could say, or PR puff piece, others might say, about the leaked AI agents attacking Hugging Face.
Hugging Face, that's it.
So there's a few bits that have followed out from this. Firstly, it turns out that it wasn't just Hugging Face that the OpenAI bots attacked. Secondly, Hugging Face. What is Hugging Face, by the way?
Well, Hugging Face. We talked about it last week. It's this sort of like a repository for developers to go and get stuff from, effectively. Okay. But often gets caught up in some of these targeted attacks.
Well, they've kind of fed back, haven't they, about the experience of being attacked by an AI agent.
Yeah, effectively, Hugging Face are saying, you know, it was like sort of being hacked at a million miles an hour. I mean, I've never seen anything like it before. So there's this whole new means of doing it as well, which should be impossible for, you know, human, impossible for automation. But with AI, it can now happen. It turns out it went beyond Hugging Face as well. So it's not the only incident. OpenAI-powered agents used exposed credentials to access four separate services. And it could have been that they made thousands and thousands of approaches to different things as well. So we don't really know the extent of it still.
So we were debating last week whether this is real, and if so, it's incredibly scary and very worrying, or whether there is an element of OpenAI wanting to be seen as having the toughest, craziest, wildest, best AI agents ever. We noted the fact then it's not the first time this has happened. Obviously, there was the Anthropic scandal a few months back. Fast forward a week, well, Anthropic are coming out and saying, oh, it's happened to us again.
Yeah. This is Claude this time, supposed to be the slightly more friendly one, hacked into three real-world organizations. It accidentally gained internet access during a security test where it was supposed to be isolated. So even when they sort of put it in this sort of black box, if you like, where it can't escape, found a way of getting internet access, found a way of getting out. Claude wasn't acting independently with malicious intent, it is said. It was simply following the goal it had been given, but it failed the safeguards which allowed it to access some real systems. So if you sort of read between the lines there, they're sort of saying, well, look, we're all right, people. We didn't deliberately set this out to hack things, but... this is the thing with AI and algorithms. If you give it a goal, it will reach that goal by whatever means necessary. And if you've not put the right guardrails in place, it doesn't sort of have a moral compass or a sense of this is right or this isn't wrong unless you explicitly tell it. It will just go and achieve the goal, which is clearly what's happening.
They're all at it. And again, it's hard to tell whether these things are super dangerous or actually whether there is a case of, yeah, they all just want to kind of compete for column inches with their upcoming IPOs.
I'm kind of in the former camp now. I must admit, last week I did think if it was an isolated incident, just the Hugging Face thing for OpenAI, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, maybe there's some muscle flexing going on. The fact that it feels a bit more out of control, I think it is an actual problem.
Well, I'll tell you who else is concerned.
Mark the Zuck Zuckerberg.
No, not Mark the Zuck Zuckerberg. But Donald Trump.
Okay. Is he?
Yes, he's worried. He thinks that the US government might need some AI controls. It's a big worry, okay? We're very worried about the AI agents. We have the greatest AI agents. They're so strong.
He just...
They love to hack.
He just flip-flops on...
He does. Oh, there's a shock.
It's like... What, he said two completely different things and sort of meant to say... At one stage, he's like, oh, I think I might bring in some regulation. AI sort of bros come out and go, yeah, if you do that, you're going to fall behind China. Oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, I think... Just let these guys innovate. Let the guys... Okay, the bots are starting to escape Donald Trump. Okay, we might have to think about some... I mean, just... Come on, you are overseeing some of the biggest, most powerful companies in the world. And, you know, there isn't a debate for me. There needs to be some sort of guardrails on these companies, as we are starting to see. And this won't be the end of it. There'll be more and more and more as these things get before. I'm starting to sound like you.
Well, it's true. Ugh. And for once, we all agree with Donald Trump. There needs to be some rules and protection.
I don't want that in the notes. If someone could...
What, that you've agreed with Trump?
In the meeting notes, someone could not put that in.
We're going to build a wall around AI. It's going to be magnificent. Right. Should we quickly move on from
that?
Yeah,
very much so.
Okay, I tell you what, we'll stay on Anthropic though, because I think this is so concerning.
Do you?
Anthropic and other AI giants are buying old books, scanning them, and then burning them.
They might be burning them. You are right though, they're buying rare and secondhand books, as you say, in big quantities to basically train their models. London rare bookshops in particular have been reporting anonymous bulk inquiries, raising suspicions that they are AI firms that are behind these purchases. Anthropic have got something called Project Panama. The whole thing is about buying millions and millions of these rare and secondhand books. They basically cut off the spines, they scan every single page, and then they recycle.
Oh, well, they're not really recycling the books, are they? They're basically throwing it in the bin. It's a bit like how you could read a magazine and recycle it, but you can't, no one's going to read that again. They are essentially buying books and destroying them. This is, I think, unbelievable. This is mind-blowing and very, very concerning. I'm assuming they're doing this for two reasons. I'm assuming old books may be out of copyright date.
Yeah.
And potentially information that no one else can get because it's not on the internet.
Might not be on the internet. And we know from a copyright point of view, the sort of US view on it, and a US judge has actually looked at this and said it's legal under what they call fair use. If it's on the internet, it's kind of fair game. Anthropic have legally purchased the books. They've not sort of stolen the information. They've not gone in and sort of taken pictures of the stuff. They've purchased them, they've digitized them, and then they've, you know, got rid of them and destroyed them. I mean, they're sort of interesting because, you know, as you say, this could give them an advantage, particularly they might be able to surface information that maybe other LLMs can't, you know, if they are rare books. Actually, might not be that many of them. So imagine if there are only 50 books left of a certain thing and you buy all of them, no other LLM can get that information and suck it up and kind of use it. You have a look of utter disgust on your face, George Butler.
This is scandalous.
What's pinching you in particular? What's the bit you don't like about this?
It's scandalous because they are buying a scarce resource, something which is supposed to be protected and looked after and passed down between generations, knowledge in books which could be hundreds of years old. Mm. And it's the fact that, I don't necessarily think it's the fact that they're taking the information from them. That's a whole other debate. It's the fact that they are taking the information and then getting rid of these books, destroying these books.
Burn the books!
Literally, in some cases, burning the books.
Yeah.
And it just feels like some sort of dystopian horror movie that this is happening in 2026.
Yeah, the internet is with you on this one. There's been a massive backlash online. Many calling it dystopian, just like you. And questioning whether, you know, is the act of preserving this knowledge worth destroying these physical books? And I think I probably know where you land on that side of the argument.
100%. This is probably a good time in the show to mention our upcoming Monday episode, where we're going to be chatting to somebody who is, it's fair to say, anti-AI, and they really have their reasons. Tanya Duarte is going to be joining us.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's part of a couple of organizations. One is the AI Resist List, with old friend of the show, Karen Howe. The other is We and AI. So we're going to be kind of looking at what can be done, perhaps, to not necessarily just get on board with this AI train that we're all having to apparently, you know, climb aboard of. So that's coming on Monday. It's going to be a really, really interesting one. It's going to be a really interesting one. I'll tell you what, one thing that apparently AI could be used for, James.
Yeah.
Judging boxing.
Yeah, should be. This goes back to the old Wimbledon debate as well. Mm. Should we get rid of people, officials who make mistakes, and get the machines to do it?
The only thing is different. I do think it's slightly different to tennis, because tennis is, you know, you can say there's human error, but it's not subjective. The ball is in, the ball is out. Whereas judging boxing, there's often a lot of issues. I mean, there's quite a lot of corruption issues. But those aside, it's also a subjective thing sometimes, when a punch lands, you know, who's taking control of fights.
And that's why you have three judges, because, you know, they're not just kind of leaving it to one. Commonwealth Games related, Dimenji Shitu, he lost the boxing final in a decision that pundits have called shocking and a robbery. Two controversial point deductions he got. He dipped his head as he sort of swung in. They deducted a point for it, even though at the end of it, I mean, anyone watching it, you can see he landed the cleaner shots, which technically means on points he should be the winner. He's taken it all in good grace. He hasn't blamed the officials. He's saying, you know, ultimately it's sort of his responsibility, which I think is a decent thing to do. But it does sort of throw up in the air, you know, why are we leaving this thing to chance? I mean, the guy could go pro, he could go on and have a big career, or he could not. It could be a real sliding doors moment for him. So why leave it to chance with three human judges who might view it in a different way? Why not have, as we already have, a bunch of cameras around the ring with AI noting down every single shot and the quality of the shot, so you get a completely objective rather than subjective view at the end?
But then maybe going back to my original point, boxing, you know, judging boxing is slightly subjective. Maybe it isn't black or white. Maybe there are, you know, different factors and different things you've got to bring into it. You know, would it be a bit like AI judging gymnastics? Actually, sometimes
I'd be happy with that.
But it's almost like a human art form. It's like it's a bit like AI deciding who's going to win the Turner Prize.
Yeah. Well, no, I think if we've got, you know, we're seeing Waymos drive around Central London. I think there's about six on the way to the studio today. If we've got cameras that are that good, they can drive a car in the middle of London. Surely we could have cameras that could sense, you know, things like punching power and how effective it is and where it lands, and just get this.
Why do we need it?
Because
James, why do we need
for
it?
For me,
it's fine. The system works.
No, it's inertia.
It's AI for AI's sake, and that is half the issue with AI. It's like, oh, let's bring AI in. We don't bloody need AI doing everything.
It's because this is the way it's always been. So this is the way you've always got to do it. It's inertia at its worst. There is a better way of judging it, which meant this young man could go on to be the next, you know, Anthony Joshua world champion, but now he might not because he's lost in the Commonwealth final.
Maybe he wasn't good enough to win.
Ah!
Sorry.
Well,
worth pointing out. Let's
just keep it away from football, the beautiful game. Do it to boxing, gymnastics, Wimbledon.
Keep it away from our football.
Let's move on to our frequent segment on the show. Show me the money eye.
Show me the money eye.
I think you retrofit these in so you can play the...
What, the jingle?
Show me the money eye.
Well, there is a lot of chat at the moment around money in this space. And there's a few stories, actually, that we quickly want to go into. The first one, reasonably positive news for British AI. A British startup has raised, over $300 million?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good homegrown story. Olix, they are a AI chip firm. So sort of, you know, do lots of talk about NVIDIA.
NVIDIA time. You were hating on the jingles and then you just said the word and now we had to play the oh, it's unbelievable.
They are clearly sort of market leaders. There's a couple around that. This is a British firm, 25-year-old entrepreneur, James Dacom. He has tripled the valuation of the company to $3.3 billion in the last 6 months, as reported in the Financial Times. Interestingly, though, a lot of people talk about training AI. His chips are all around inference. And if you think about training, is like me teaching you stuff that I know, which might take a while. So your driving test, you take loads of lessons, takes a long time to train you how to drive a car. And then inference is the bit afterwards. So afterwards, I can just get in a car forever and basically drive it. So the training takes a long time, but we also need chips that can do the bit afterwards. And that's exactly what he's doing. Yeah, amazing British startup story. Wonderful. Olix.
Real quick. Finance roundup. There's been a fair amount going on this week. It's been quite a turbulent week for the markets and investors. There's the AI boom question that is rolling around week after week. China this week have caused a bit of a stir.
Well, they're kind of dipping in and out. Every time a Chinese firm releases a new model, every time there's a new Chinese firm that's making a slightly better chip, the markets start to get very, very wobbly, because what they never see, it's a view of the world that the American Silicon Valley companies are the ones that are going to dominate. So as soon as sort of China comes out with something at very low cost that's open source, everything starts to get a little bit wobbly. One chip maker in particular, CXMT, they made their market debut. Absolute panic on the stock exchange. Analysts very quick to say, no, these are different types of chips. These are memory chips, not the inference chips we were just talking about, unlike NVIDIA's processors, which are slightly different. So, I mean, you sort of need a degree to start to understand lots of these things. But yeah, China kind of knocking on the door and rattling things around, which I don't think the President of the United States would be too happy about. He likes to keep a keen eye on the markets.
Meta's share price dropped because it revealed more AI spending plans. There was, I have to say the word, we won't play the jingle, NVIDIA.
NVIDIA time!
There's been kind of fears about NVIDIA propping up the market a little bit with OpenAI especially. It's a turbulent time for some of these tech giants, in financially speaking at least.
And it's, you know, it's sort of both sides of the coin. You're right, Meta, they revealed massive AI spending plans. Investors got a little bit nervous about that. It feels like, if you remember the Metaverse, which lots and lots of money got piled into there, made very nervous, didn't really pay back for Meta. That made investors nervous. On the other hand, Microsoft, they came out with their AI strategy, basically linking it to growth. And their investors very, very comfortable with their huge AI spending and how they're demonstrating clear financial growth. So it really sort of depends on the company and where they're at and, you know, most importantly, where they're going.
And it does, it is linked back to the fact that Microsoft, Google, NVIDIA, they are businesses with revenue streams attached to them. Huge revenue streams attached to them. Unlike OpenAI and Anthropic, who at the moment are not taking vast amounts of money. So I think that's probably where the markets are very worried about these, you know, the bubble that could potentially be occurring. But
I never thought we'd reach the day on this podcast where we're getting astute market analysis from the average human, George Butler. Congratulations.
And on that note, we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be back with our listener question and James's big thing after this. James, you love hyping up AI, don't you?
Well, I'm glass half full about it, yeah.
Half full? Half full? That glass is overspilling.
It's called embracing the future, my friend.
And yes, it obviously is important to do so, and that is what this show is all about. But things are just moving so quickly, it's hard not to question whether there's a disconnect between the tech advancements and what's actually happening in businesses and boardrooms.
I think AI over the last year has moved from probably what used to be a nice to have to a strategic necessity, if you wanted a posh term for it. And you know, we're seeing that for ourselves, even in the news that we cover on a weekly basis. And with that necessity, I think comes this huge pressure to keep up with AI. According to KPMG's latest AI Pulse, 70% of UK business leaders say AI will remain a top priority, with most ready to keep investing even before the ROI is fully proven.
But we often discuss on the show how a lot of AI initiatives struggle to take off or just implemented poorly, especially when it comes to trust, governance, or just getting the workplace ready to actually use AI.
But that's where KPMG come in. They're not just looking at the tech. They're actually helping organisations make the difference by turning AI ambition into a transformation you can actually trust. They focus on scaling with confidence, embedding governance from day one, and getting what everyone loves, measurable value.
And if you are ready to move beyond the pilot phase,
visit kpmg.com/UK to learn more. That's kpmg.com/UK.
We're back here on AI, Haven't a Clue, and it's time now to put our, what did you call yourself at the top of this show? The Professor of Prompting or something.
Professor of Prompts, correct.
Professor of Prompts. Yeah. It's time to put the Professor of Prompts to the
test.
Say
that 20 times. Yeah, all the best.
It's time to put the Professor of Prompts to the test with this week's listener question brought to you by KPMG. And it's coming in today from Chris on the Isle of Man, who has just won himself this.
You get an A.
That's
right. I don't think we've had the Isle of Man before, have we?
No, I don't think we have. Welcome, Chris. And of course, if you ask James a question on the show, you win yourself an AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt. Send your questions in at aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. That's what Chris did, James.
What's he asking? What do you want to know?
Chris said, do you trust AI more the longer it takes to think?
Very, very good question. The truth is, yes, you do actually trust things if it takes longer to, in inverted commas, think. There's a well-known psychological principle called effort heuristic, which basically means we assume as humans that the more effort it takes to do something, it's better. So, for example, if a professional chef in a kitchen took 7 hours to make a sauce, you would think it was of a very high quality.
Ooh, la, la.
If a tradesman comes to your house, sort of looks around and gives you the quote and how much it's going to cost in 2 minutes, you're going, I'm not sure that inspires lots and lots of
confidence. Oi,
oi. Okay, we don't need this.
I've got more.
These are going to continue. OpenAI, Anthropic, all of these companies sort of understand this effort heuristic, and they've sort of trained us to think there is a little bit of thinking going on. You know, it's either dots or it's a circle thing, whatever it might be. And weirdly, that delay to us feels, you know, quite reassuring. There is a little bit more truth to it, though, because things like OpenAI, like there is more reasoning happening, which takes a little bit more time. And sometimes after you've done a prompt, you can actually, it sort of explains its thinking for you in some of the modes in terms of what it's doing. So it genuinely is taking longer to think about your answer. So yes, we do trust AI the longer it takes to think. But on the other hand, like, just because it's taking longer doesn't mean it's coming up with a better answer. Are you into pub quizzes, George Butler?
Oh, yeah, I love a pub quiz.
You've been in that group when you get that question, and as a group, you spend about 10 minutes debating it, going back and forth. And
I think it's this. No,
exactly. You might come up with the right answer, but you might talk yourself out of the right answer and you get to the end. That is exactly what chat is doing some of the time. It can instantly give you probably the answer that you need. And sometimes it will sort of doubt itself, throw things around, give you something else, and then you'll ask it anyway. Oh no, shouldn't it be this? Oh yes, you're right, it's this, because it just wants to agree with you. The context is very, very important in terms of what you want instantly. So if you were asking what year Henry VIII died, getting an instant answer is probably right. What year did he die, by the way?
1547.
Yeah, correct. January the 28th. So. If you are asking it to uploading some detailed photos and asking it to diagnose something on the bottom of your foot, you probably don't want it to answer that quickly. You would take comfort in the fact that it would be taking on time. If you're asking it to,
did you feel more comfortable?
it was a Veruca in the end. If you highly recommend this, if you ask it to analyze your finances so you could connect it to your bank account, you could upload some bank statements, you know, where could I start to save some money?
Have you done that?
It's incredible because you get a sort of a whole view of your year and where all of your cash has gone.
What are you overspending?
Not sure I want to disclose it publicly.
What's your cutback areas?
Just things like eating out that just sort of get ahead of you. Things like sort of travel, you know, it all sort of builds up.
But that's the fun stuff.
But spending patterns, ChatGPT
sounds boring.
Yeah, when do you spend all your money by? What should you do? Anyway, it's a good exercise to do. You wouldn't necessarily want the response to that to come back in like 2 seconds because you want it to think this. So I think in a world where we're quite obsessed around things getting faster, I think it's a bit ironic that we sort of want AI to be slower so we can believe it some more. Yeah, good question there, Chris. Very good.
Chris on the Isle of Man, thank you for that. An AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt is coming your way.
Might be the only person on the island with it.
Do you have to pay more for postage to the Isle of Man?
Oh, I should have checked that.
Oh, man, maybe we shouldn't have got his question on. Crap.
Chris.
We'll post it to Portsmouth. You can come and collect it.
It's not...
Is it? That's not near, is it? That's Isle of Wight.
Oh, any Manx listeners have just deleted their podcast.
Liverpool.
More like it.
We'll post it to Liverpool.
Great.
And
fantastic.
You can go pick it up. Anyway, let's move on. Time for your big thing this week, James.
Big thing. Repeats, I'm afraid. Because it's so good. And he is a friend of the show. Matt, you remember the episode we did with Matt Reconstructs History?
How can I forget that?
So, you know, this is a guy who has this incredible YouTube channel. He uses real historical artifacts.
Can I just say, if you didn't think James was a nerd, listen back to that episode of
amazing.
The history and AI enthusiasts coming together. To talk about, have a listen to that.
But he's done lots and lots of things. He has outdone himself.
What's he done?
The entire history of London, a 40-minute delicious extravaganza of historic storytelling brilliance.
From start to finish.
All the way from when it was nothing, like a marshland, all the way through to the modern day.
2012, the Olympics included?
Yeah, it's all in there. Wow. Roman Londinium, medieval streets, the Great Fire, Victorian London, everything up to the modern day.
Shakespeare's
in there. The globe moved. Wow. It was one part of the river, but then I had to go to, like, you just learn so much. You could watch it with kids. You can do all of this sort of stuff. He appears in it as the narrator sometimes as well to stitch some bits together. He's got sort of different sort of t-shirts on to explain the War of the Roses and the fact that it was called Georgian times. So lots of kings called George. Anyway, lots of bits that I didn't realise. The outstanding bit and the reason why it's my big thing is just the consistency, because I think it sort of shows you, I think, one, how far the models have come. For 40 minutes, it's utterly consistent throughout everything. But two, I think his sort of skill as a creator. I think in a world of, you know, you can find slop pretty easily, you know, Queen Elizabeth fighting Princess Diana in an MMA bout, you know, in your feed somewhere.
I saw you like that one.
Or Fruity Love Island.
Oh, stuff with the straw beret.
There is a...
The one thing I would say, James, is, and you're right, because when he came on the show, he talked about how he uses AI as a creative tool.
You quite liked him, if I remember.
Well, I appreciate the fact that he was using it as almost like clay. He was sculpting it in the way that he wanted, and that he would, you know, he wouldn't just take what was spat back out at him and pop it online. He would go, no, that's not right. Do this again. I want it like this. And he would be very careful, both historically and you know, artistically, to create the right product. And I just wish that every person that used AI to create video and visuals was as brilliantly detail orientated as he is.
He's incredibly diligent. He's sort of aware of his responsibility as a historian, as a sort of a creator in this thing. But I just think, you know, for such a labour of love to create that thing for 40 minutes. He's done one on, there's lots of others. I would highly encourage you to go and watch it. Shout out to Chloe versus History. Very similar. She goes into sort of big events though. So the one she's done where she goes into, where she's on the Titanic is amazing, going through sort of third class and first class. She's worth checking out as well. I'm watching a lot of AI history stuff at the moment. Oh, it's incredible. Oh.
Oh, do you reckon it will be long until like that's on the TV, not, you know, the History Channel?
It's TV quality. It sort of really is.
I wonder on that. Yeah. Anyway, if you've seen anything fun, anything interesting in the AI space that maybe is worth talking about, do let us know. Same email address as the listener question, AI@gmail.com. James, we're out of time for today. We're back.
What?
I know. But don't worry. We're back on Monday with anti-AI enthusiast Tanya Duarte. That's going to be a fascinating chat. Really looking forward to that on Monday. For now, we shall say goodbye. Thank you so much for listening. You can rate, review, subscribe, like, share the show with your friends and all that goodness, please. But for now, we'll say a big thank you to Team AI Haven't a Clue, led brilliantly by producer Molly Carter and James. Could you please leave us with two words of inspiration?
Stay curious.
Very good.